I'd like to read from Wilfred Peterson's little book entitled The Art of Being tonight. This particular article is entitled The Art of Prayer. The highest level of prayer is to think God's thoughts after Him, to attune our lives to love, hope, faith, justice, kindness, to become open channels for the goodness of God. Prayer does not change God. It changes us. It deepens insight, increases intuitive perception, expands consciousness. It transforms personality. Prayer opens doors to let in God and let out self, to let in love and let out hate, to let in faith and let out fear. Prayer helps us to find ourselves by praying, not to get more, but to be more. We discover a way to serve, a purpose for which to live, a dream to make real. Prayer is dedicating our thought, feeling, and action to the expression of goodness. It is to become like a window through which the light of God shines. And from Swami Ramdas, we have the article entitled, Thou Art That. Realize that you are the self-luminous, unconditioned, ever-free, and absolute reality. In you, there does not exist any limit, bondage, or ignorance. You are the embodiment of the universal spirit and nature. Hence, you are eternal existence, consciousness, and bliss. You are at once static and dynamic, ever silent, serene, and changeless truth, and also ever active, changing, and creative power. The qualities and the pairs of opposites belong to a wrong conception of what you are. Identity with the individual life and form has been the cause of your conflict and pain. You are always governed by a universal law. Submission to that law means release from the prison house of your own making. The moment you know that you are one with all beings and existences, you break down the walls of separation from the cosmic truth. In fact, such a separation does not exist. When your inner light is clouded with a strange veil of nescience, you think, feel, and act as though you have a distinctive, isolated personality. When the veil is rent through right understanding, and the consequent awareness of your real nature, you at once realize that all life is one. All objects, forms, and beings are the expression of one truth. It is not a question of attainment or acquisition of a new state, but it is the revealment of your true, radiant, and immortal being. Although at first, in the process of the removal of the veil, you take it that the spirit and matter are two different things as they appear in their nature diametrically opposed to each other. In the ultimate, all comprehensive and perfected experience, you realize they are one. Now all standards that guided you hitherto in your life drop off, and the freedom you experience is simply inexpressible. Eternal rapture seizes you and permeates you through and through. Every atom of your being, so to say, thrills to the pulsation of cosmic music and harmony. It must be noted that suppression of desires in the realization of the goal is not the way. You have to sublimate, divinize, and transform them. When you are liberated from the clutches of the ego sense through the mingling of your individual life and the cosmic existence, the poisonous instincts of self-seeking with which your desires are imbued disappear. Then your life and all its actions flow in a spirit of spontaneity, yielding you a pure, self-contained, and objectless joy and ecstasy. Therefore, repeatedly, you are enjoined upon to surrender your individual will to the cosmic will, to fill your vision with the light of God who pervades all the worlds, to dissolve your ego in an immanent and transcendent consciousness, and thus realize that there is only one truth and one life, and that your separation from this truth and life is utterly false. Now, when you seem to be apparently progressing on the divine path, you are already at the destination. So, a conscious and deliberate struggle and endeavor to reach the goal seems to be absurd. You are already that. You have only to doff the mask and reveal yourself. And he has a little poem down at the bottom here. Make thy heart a shrine of love. Fill it with the fragrance of peace. Light in it the lamp of wisdom. Adorn it with flowers of joy. Then ecstasy supreme, seize thee through and through, and make thee a very image of God. For our Bible reading tonight, we have St. Matthew chapter 16, beginning with verse 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, and whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. What is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. Verily I say unto you, there be some standing here which shall not taste of death till they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. I've chosen for my subject tonight one that Master talked about constantly. Change yourself and you will change thousands. This is the truth. Change yourself and you will change thousands. In order to do that, you must pick up your cross, which is your body, and follow the Christ which is within you, constantly guiding you, directing you, watching after you, protecting you, taking care of you in every department of your life. Everybody wants to hang on to this human life. We had a question about fear the other evening. But the greatest thing and the only thing to fear is fear itself. Why do you think that that fear comes into your consciousness? It is the fear of this human ego, that which in truth does not exist. It thinks of itself as separate from God. And its fear is that it will lose its independence, its power to move and act on its own, to take credit for everything that it does, to give itself all of the glory that should be given to God alone. It is truly the Antichrist within every man. And believe me, it sets up a battle because it is constantly deluding you, telling you to hang on to the things of the senses, and putting fear in your mind that if you were to let go of the things of the senses and reach out for God alone, that somehow you will be destroyed. You're going to have terrible experiences. You may even die. And yet you have to die in order to live. This human ego, the Son of Man, has to die in order that we may be aware of the eternal life of God within ourselves. Now this involves discipleship, because it says, if you will not pick up your cross and follow the Christ, you cannot be his disciple. And that means exactly what it says. And so, the first step in picking up your cross and following the Christ is to discover within yourself a deep yearning for God. A yearning that is so great that it supersedes your yearning for everything, for everyone else in the world. If you would yearn after him as you yearn after the things of the senses, if you would yearn after him as you yearn to have a lover, a child, a husband, a wife, whatever, and put into it everything you have, you would find that you would go forth on the path very rapidly. But we kid ourselves. We play games with ourselves. We tell ourselves that everything else is more important and that God always comes second. We have an awful time getting up a little bit early in the morning and meditating upon God, of keeping awake at night in order to do what we should to establish our oneness with Him, and yet He gives us 24 hours of the day. He gives us our very life, the right to move and live and breathe and have our being. It is His thoughts that constantly fill our minds. It is His energy that makes it possible for us to do the creative work that we do. It is His will that projects everything in this world. We are co-creators with Him. He has given us this blessed privilege. And still we try to save this life. We try to save the life that isn't worth anything and give up that which is eternal within ourselves. Do you not realize what you're missing? That when you make the supreme sacrifice, even if you have the greatest fear in your heart, that if you just plunge into the ocean of God's life, His love, His bliss, that still you will live. But if you try to save your life, you will lose it. You will go like any other ordinary human being. And it says in this chapter that before this thing happens, this death, that many will see the Son of Man in all of His glory. That means that if the human being tries with everything he has to realize his oneness with God, that before the regular human death comes, that he will see the glory of the Savior crucified on his own cross and arisen from the dead, that he will realize truth, that he will have access to the source of all things, all things. It's a tremendous thing when you think of God's omnipresence. And you think, and you really realize the fact that there is not one thought, one word, one action that you do that God is not aware of because He is omnipresent. That seems such a vast thing to think about. And you say, how in the world can He know everything at every moment in His omniscience when everything is so vast, so multiplied? And the reason is that He, out of His own substance, His own form, made man in His image. And He Himself is the eternal Word which dwells in every single form which He made. It is His consciousness. So He Himself is the indwelling presence. He is conscious of everything you, as a separate human being, you think, say, and do, and you don't get away with a thing. The only person you fool is yourself. And you keep yourself from eternal bliss, eternal happiness, and eternal truth. And that is a shame. Because the more you go into the inner sanctuary of your own being, and you experience the bliss of God's presence, you feel His great peace, His great love, and He starts to feed into your mind all of the great knowledge, reveal the hidden meaning behind the parables, gives you the true kernel that's inside of the nut which covers up the truth. And you see the expansion and the expansion and expansion. You see how He works minutely in every form. His presence is there. His consciousness is there. His power is there. His will is there. And it spreads all over the world, and there is nothing but God anywhere. No matter what you need, what you want, everything that you need an answer to is given unto you. And the unfoldment goes on and on and on. And you sit there in awe and wonder, wondering how you could be so fortunate as to have all of this unfold before you. When you get rid of this idea of separation, believe me, it is a blessed thing to see God everywhere. As I've said many times before, and it is not original with me, God takes on many guises. There are many people whose personalities you certainly cannot love. But you can love that infinite spirit in every single one. And no matter what anybody says, thinks, or does about you or to you, you can answer back. Like the little boy heard in the Alps the other night, the echo to what he put forth. I love you, I love you, I love you. If you have an enemy, go within yourself, visualize his face in your point of Christ consciousness here, and tell him that you love him with the love of God. See him perfect in God. See him lifted up above all of the sordidness and the cares that have made him whatever he is that is distasteful to you. But do not put upon him your own burden of hatred, of resentment, of smallness. So many times we think that everything and everybody around us is wrong, doing the wrong thing. And yet we could not see it in that light unless we first had that within our own consciousness. So the place to change is within yourself. And in order to do that, you have to, when this yearning comes to you, find your own path and your own teacher. And it requires absolute dedication, absolute loyalty, absolute work. Because no goal was ever accomplished in this world without total dedication to the perfecting of that goal. And the ones that go from teacher to teacher, from path to path, are getting absolutely nowhere. They may be getting intellectual knowledge, but they are not attaining their God realization, because you have to stick to the one teacher and to the one path if you are going to progress. And still many, because of the intellectual knowledge they gain through following different paths, reading different books, going to different teachers, set themselves up as teachers and feel that they are qualified to direct the lives of others to where they should go, to what they should do. And they haven't even started, in that case, to put their feet on the first rung of the ladder. And this is the truth. You've got to be one-pointed in your devotion. You cannot take the responsibility for other people's lives until you yourself have realized God in all of his fullness and all of his glory. Until you yourself have paid the total, the complete price for the knowledge of the truth. And the truth is that God is, and he is everywhere equally present. But in order to find that truth, in order to realize it within yourself, then you have to be totally dedicated to one path and to one teacher. And that teacher, if that one is what he or she should be, will bring you to that point where you go within yourself and find God. And then, having attained that state of illumination, you will see him in every path and every teacher. And you will bow down to each and every one, because God is there. It is not done to curtail your activity, to make you a slave to any particular one, but it is done to help you. It is done to protect you. It is done to keep you one-pointed in your love, your loyalty, your devotion for God, Christ, and Guru. Because that is the one that God has chosen to take you to himself. Nobody could unglue me from my Guru. I am not interested in anyone else from the standpoint of their path, their teaching. And yet I respect the truth in every path, in every teacher. I respect it with all my heart. I can mingle with them, but I have my own, and I will never deviate from that. You know, it's a strange thing, but every time any of the devotees at Mount Washington would go to Master with a problem, he wouldn't have long spiritual discussions with them, and perhaps many of them felt, well, they were being neglected, because why shouldn't the Guru sit down and talk to them at least for an hour or more about their own personal problems, whether they be in the human sense or the mental sense or the personal sense or the emotional sense. And Master had one stock answer all the time, with very, very few exceptions, and that was, put your attention up here at the point of Christ consciousness. Every problem that you have, if you will first take it to God, then you will find that the problem solves itself. I have had this happen in my own life time after time after time. Some things, some situations are very difficult to rise above. People come at you pretty rigidly sometimes, and some of them blast you. They insult you. They do this and that and the other thing, and they accuse you unjustly. And it's very, very difficult to deal with this at times. But if you will just take a deep breath and let go of all the fury inside of yourself, and put your mind on God. Rise above the problem and think only of Him. You will realize that that one too is God, and that the only problem exists in your own reaction to it. And so quickly you learn to overcome it, to see them again as a child of God. And that's the greatest help you can give anybody, to see them filled with God, to give them love, to give them understanding. It's absolutely necessary. Some teachers say that you should cultivate humility. I have seen people cultivate humility. And believe me, they are not humble. Because when you deliberately start to cultivate humility, immediately you get this holier-than-thou attitude. I'm doing this. I'm being humble. I am this. I am that. And I'm the other thing. Some of them wear sackcloth and ashes, and they go around with long-drawn, sanctimonious, holier-than-thou expressions on their faces. And they haven't gone anyplace. They are not humble. Humility comes only by putting your full attention upon God, by striving every moment to realize your oneness with Him. And when that oneness comes, then this little self disappears. And there is nothing but God in that form. And when that human form is totally surrendered to God, then you cannot cultivate humility or anything else. Because it is your will to do the will of your Father. And every moment the power of God is flowing through your consciousness, through your whole being, and you are whatever He makes you to be. You think, you say, you do everything in accordance with His direction. In fact, you do not do it. He does it through this form which He has made. And it's a tremendous position to be in because it relieves you of the responsibility of making a decision as to what you're going to do. Because if you're really totally surrendered to God, if you have true humility, then you do not exist. And here you are, merely the witness of everything that the Christ does through you and for you. It's a beautiful position to be in. Absolutely beautiful. I would like total dedication, total loyalty to God. I ask nothing more of any one of you than that. This is my greatest desire, that you should find Him within yourself, that you should be lifted up into the mountain of your own beings and see the light of God's infinite presence, to have yourself so filled with that light that you shiver in the ecstasy, the bliss of that presence. I have had this. I know what I'm speaking of. It is present in me every moment of my life, but I have to come down from the mountaintop and work in this world of duality, as I've told you many times. And this is true of every teacher. And many, many times you think, like Jesus, you'd like to go up in the mountain of your own being and just pray and commune with Him, to enter His secret temple and just shut the door and be all by yourself. But maybe He doesn't design your life that way. But you're never going to get any place by always thinking that tomorrow you're going to do it. I want action now. I don't stand up here just to waste my breath. I stand up here for your sake. And I would like you to cooperate. I would like you to meditate every morning, every night. I would like you to truly dedicate your lives for God through Christ. I would like to see the results coming through your communication, through your goodwill towards your fellow human beings, particularly the people that you live with. Learn to love God and fail to see all of the things that displease you, because they may displease you, but they may be pleasing to someone else. And the problem is not necessarily the other individual's, it is yours, because you cannot accommodate yourself to the free will and the working of someone else's life pattern. That's true. But as you gain in wisdom, you learn that each human being has the right to be himself. Now, it is true that he must be taught courtesy, consideration, thoughtfulness to all human beings because God dwells in that form. But God made each one of us special. Each one is a VIP, a very important person. Each one coming with his own special gift in God, his own special work to do. And you have to shake the world up until you find that work. Otherwise, you are like the beggar standing at the gates begging for alms, watching life pass you by. And you have failed to get in and do your part, to do your work, to make your life here on this earth count. Do you realize how difficult it is to have human birth? It is most, most difficult. Every time that a man and a woman come together in physical union, if it is possible for the woman to conceive, there are any number of souls fighting to get in there, fighting to be that life, that soul is going to enter the mother's body. I remember very strongly one very, very strong individual that just sort of pushed everything and everybody before him. He was so set on doing his own will in life. And I once said to him, I said, I bet when it came time for you to be born, you said, look out, folks, here I come. And he entered in there, and he was here. And another one was constantly complaining. You know, it's interesting to see all the different people and the way they manifest themselves in the various lifestyles and the reactions to it. And this person was constantly complaining. He was in a high position, and so he had servants who worked under him and all this and that. And the story was told about a friend of his was present at a meal one time, and he sets the food back. This was in his own home three different times because it didn't satisfy him. Finally, his friend said to him, you know, I think when you came in this earth, he said, you came out of your mother's womb, you looked, took a good look around, and you said, my God, what an awful mess, and you haven't stopped complaining yet. And some people are like that. It is really true. And you do not realize what a tremendous privilege this life is. But the soul, you see, when it is in the mother's womb, all of a sudden, having fought to get in there, realizes that it has imprisoned itself. And because it is new in the mother's womb, sometimes the memory comes from former lives, different incidents that happens, and then gradually it identifies. It gets hungry, doesn't sleep when the mother sleeps, necessarily. Sometimes it wakes her up through, she thinks a football the game is going on inside of her. But anyway, when it's hungry, it feeds from the blood, it nourishes from her own body. But also it can be taught while it is still in the mother's womb. And all of us on the spiritual path here know the value of keeping the full consciousness upon God when you are hoping to conceive a child and while you are carrying a child. Keep your mind on God. Think only of Him. Speak of Him. Teach your child while it is still in the womb to be a holy person. And as you do that, and more spiritual children are born into this world, the world will be uplifted. It will become a more spiritual world. You know, there's a tremendous upsurge now, a crying out for spiritual knowledge, of spiritual truth. People are tired of listening to promises, because the promises were couched in parables. And they look for everything that is promised to happen outside of themselves, not realizing that the only place they're going to find it is within themselves. All the answers, all of the energy, everything is there. If you can't find your place, then go inside and meditate. Open up this spiritual eye. Focus upon it and focus upon it and ask God to reveal Himself to you until you have but to lift your eyes up there and the answers come. Or they come through your God-given intuition. The feeling and the pictures come and the certain knowledge that this is mine or this is what I should do or this is the truth. And it comes so clearly that it is pure logic. You cannot argue with it. And it is beautiful. And the higher you climb in the mountain, even after you are up on the summit, still there is all the whole universe that you still have to conquer. You conquer the universe within yourself, And then you go on to explore God's greater universe. And it's the greatest adventure in the world. There is no adventure. Nothing that man can seek. Be he a mountain climber, he wants to go up in the sky and glide down, or he wants to go up in an airplane, or whatever he wants to do. Plumb the depths of the earth and the heights of heaven. Still, there is no greater thing than to get his God realization. That is the adventure, because it's the adventure of every soul, and it takes you on many strange journeys. But the thing is that you don't realize that you could control a lot of the things that happen to you if you only would. But you're willing to suffer yourself to be made a patsy of sometimes, you know? You haven't got the guts to stand up and say, I have a right to live my life. I have a right to be me. And you do. How can you be anything else but your real self? Because if you are doing anything other than that, you are a hypocrite. And that is the truth. Hypocrisy is a terrible thing. And there are many, many so-called spiritual people who operate apparently in a spiritual sense, and it is totally under the guise of hypocrisy, I can tell you. I've seen it. I've experienced it with many, many people. There's one thing you always get from me, and that is pure honesty. I don't pretend to be something I'm not. I don't pretend not to wear makeup. I don't pretend not to eat meat. I don't pretend that I don't do this or that or the other thing. I'm right out in the open. But I'm trying to set the example, and that is something that every devotee must do. If they are sincere about realizing their oneness with God, then one of the most important things in the world is to be the example of that which you say you follow. You've got to be the kind of a person that in the first place is able to respect yourself. Because only when you respect yourself can you hope to get the respect of other people. And you've got to put everything into it. But don't go into it with the idea, well, I've come so far now, and maybe you've only come just a little way, so I'm in a position to help everybody else because look at how great I've become. Your first and only job is to get your own God realization, and then God will take care of the rest. He will decide what he wants you to do, what his will is for you. And constantly we're just trying to decide, shall I do this or shall I do that? And we never stop to think that if we would sit down quietly and go within and put our full attention upon God and say, Lord, what is thy will, that we might get a few answers that we can't get otherwise. But we fight. We try to make a decision to do this or to do that. And sometimes we're just at a standstill. We sit on top of a fence. We're afraid to fall off this side. We're afraid to fall that we might fall off that side. And yet, if we don't make a decision, we're for sure going to get tired enough that we're going to fall off one side or the other. We may not like the side we fell off on because we failed to make a firm decision. Now, if you can't get God's guidance, then sit down, write the pros and the cons down, and determine from the human state. God gave you intelligence. He gave you judgment. He gave you reason. He gave you the power to make a choice. So do the best you can in the human sense if you can't feel that direction. And that is God's direction at that time, whether you think it or not. He wants you, in your human sense, to make a decision. Now, maybe it isn't going to come out well humanly, and you're going to say, well, God, I prayed to you. If you'd only showed me, I would have avoided all this mess. But you had to go through that mess because that was an experience you had to have in order to grow in consciousness. Because every tough thing that we have to go through and conquer makes us a little bit bigger person. And it enlarges your consciousness so that you're able to meet the next obstacle you come to with greater energy, greater insight, and greater persistence. Because having overcome an obstacle once, you know that you can do it again. It gives you a feeling of power inside. And you know that power is not your own, but you know that you're measuring up as a disciple. And that's what you have to do. You just can't go through life complaining, finding fault with everything that happens in your life and with everybody else. Because you first have to look at yourself. You have to take a broom and sweep out your own house and make it clean and keep it clean. And then you have to reach out for that light which is within you. And it isn't outside of you. It's inside of yourself. It's there every single moment. Everything you need is within yourself. You will find unexplored worlds there. A whole universe. And it's so fascinating. So fascinating. And don't forget, if occasionally you happen to have a vision of a form you don't like or an incident that you don't like, that you put it there. It's one of your thought forms. One of the things perhaps that you did sometime in the past and being dredged up to face you. Only when you did it, you see, it wore a totally different garment. It put on a very attractive, seductive garment to lure you to itself. But then all of a sudden you see it stark naked for what it is, and you don't like it very well. And you know that you've been looking at it with rose-colored glasses, and when you took your glasses off, it wasn't very pretty to look at. And you wonder how you could have ever been ensnared by this trap, put into this deep well. I would like you to dedicate yourselves, to release yourselves from this prison house so that you can come and go at will. Isn't it better to conquer your fears by putting your mind fully upon God, knowing you are His child, that there is no such thing as death, so what do you have to fear? And conquer all that and be master of your own life instead of a slave? To really be able to stand up and be counted, to have your self-respect. And you don't have to go to war to do that, you know. You have to give love, and you keep on giving love. And you keep on giving gentleness and kindness. And if God happens to want something else, He will arrange His righteous wrath to come forth through you without any effort on your part. It just happens. And you think, how in the world did I happen to do that? Why did I say that? Out it came. Well, if you had no conscious control over it, it must have been God's will. It must have been God's will. And it was for a purpose. It was for a purpose. You will never reach your goal until you really dedicate yourself wholeheartedly, one-pointedly, on God, on one teacher, on one path, and get your own God realization first. Then He will make you a healer. He will make you a prophet. He will make you a worker. He will make you a minister, a guru, or whatever. He will do that. And when it is His will, everything flows in harmony. Everything falls into place. And when you try to do it yourself, sometimes you buck up against one stone wall after another, and you say, well, I've tried everything. I don't know what to do. Of course, nothing is working out. And you know why? Because you were trying to do it. You didn't let God do it through you. And that's one of the most important things that you can remember. Love, loyalty, complete and total dedication to God, Christ, and the Guru will take you there faster than any other thing in this world. And it's the most tremendous feeling. I can remember so well that to me, my Guru was God in human form. And He existed so totally like that for me that I couldn't see the universal God. I knew He was there someplace in the background, but there was God. And He knew everything. And I thought He was keeping track of me every second of my life. And I learned later with the vast number of devotees that He had, it wasn't humanly possible, you know. But God in Him kept track of me. And whenever it was necessary for Him to find out something about me or to direct me, God gave it to Him, just as He does me with you. Because when you have realized your oneness with God, everything that you need is given unto you. Remember that you seek God and His righteousness and the kingdom of heaven first. And then all of the other things are added unto you. But that has to come first. It has to come first. It has to come first. Let me emphasize it and repeat it and repeat it. We do nothing of ourselves. We only think we do. There are many people that keep their minds just consciously and constantly on the things of the senses, of accumulation, of possession, of wealth, of this and that and the other thing. And they forget that the greatest riches in the world, the greatest goal, is the gold of the Spirit. And if you want all of the riches in the world, then seek him first, and you are one with everything. There's a story told about a man who was out. He wandered out in the woods farther than he'd ever wandered one day, and all of a sudden he heard a voice saying, would you like 7 bags of gold? And immediately he said, yes, of course. But he couldn't see anybody around. Well, go home and you will find them there. So he went home and he found 7 bags of gold there, but one bag was only half full. And that bothered him. Here he had 6.5 bags of gold, absolutely full, and this bag of gold was half empty. So he thought, well, I've got to fill up the bag. So he gathered together all of the gold jewelry, everything around the house that was of gold, and he melted it and put it in the bag, and the bag remained just half full. And everything he could lay his hands on, he put into the bag. And he became poorer and poorer and poorer, and he worked harder and harder. He had worked for this one man for an awful long time, for the king, as a matter of fact. So he went to him and asked him if he couldn't have an increase of wages. And the king said, you have been a good and faithful servant, so I will double your wages. So everything that he got in his wages, he put in the bag, and the bag didn't get any fuller. And he kept on and on and on like this, spending time after time trying to fill the bag with money. And he went out and he finally became a beggar. And finally, the king said to him, because he was still in his employ one day, how is it, he said, you know, before you got these 7 bags of gold, he said, you were quite prosperous. You were a good servant, he said. And now, he said, you have 7.5 bags of gold. He said, you put everything you have, you put your whole a lifetime of work into this, and still you haven't gotten this bag full. He said, don't you know that this is a spell that put on? He said, I was once offered those 7 bags of gold. And he said, I asked the spirit that offered those bags of gold to me, can I spend them? And he said, immediately the spirit disappeared. Because he said, that is the spirit that keeps you bound. It is the spirit of desire, which is never satisfied. And if you can't spend them, why do you have them? So he said, I refuse them. I would suggest to you, my son, that you go back and tell the spirit that you don't want the gold. So the man went back, and he told the spirit to take away the 7 bags of gold. And so the spirit did this, and the bags of gold disappeared. But the man was a pauper. He didn't have anything. He'd wasted his whole life trying to fill up 1/2 bag of gold. There's a good lesson in that story. Tremendous. Keep your mind on God, not on money, not on possessions, not on things. And all of the money, all the possessions, all the things that he wants you to have, which you need, not necessarily that you want, but that you need, will be given to you. And many times it comes in such abundance that you don't know what to do about it. So I'll tell you a little story about elephants. I like elephants. You know, they always say in India that you worship the god Ganesha first, and he is half man and half elephant. I remember the mother Indira Devi said to me one time, she took me in a room, it was very secret. She said, you know, I was in meditation, she said, and Ganesha appeared to me, and I said to him, I want to ask you a question. Are you really half elephant and half mine, or are you a symbol? And she said, you know what he said to me? He said, I am the symbol of wisdom and light. That was the great secret that she had to tell me, you see. And so anyway, I like elephants. So my daughter gave me a beautiful little elephant, and I loved it. And then my other daughter gave me a little gold one, and I loved that. And my husband gave me a little black one, and I loved that. And Beth gave me one made out of wax, and perfume was still in it, and I loved that. It's green in color. And then Wilmer gave me one that he brought up from California. And then Wilmer gave me one that he brought from New York that was made in Africa. And a week ago last Sunday, the littlest one that I have is a little one that was made for one of the devotees' little boys, and he very gladly gave me his elephant. It was his most precious possession. And so today I got another elephant. And this one is green porcelain, and it's beautiful. It was made up in British Columbia. And I just want to tell you that I'm making a collection of elephants, but I have stopped collecting them because I don't have any more spaces to totally me. I think I have sufficient wisdom and light now. I love them. They're, you know, it'd be great, you see, if I had room to make cabinets and display all of these beautiful things. But my apartment holds only so much. You see, I've had a piano offered to me. I love to play the piano. I'm not a good pianist. I haven't taken a lesson since I was 10 years old, but I love to play. So I've had three different people offer me a piano, and I haven't got a space to put the piano. Now, that's really tragic. But probably God knows what he's doing, because you see, if I had the piano, then I'd want to play it, and then that would keep me from writing my book, wouldn't it? So, again, if you seek God and his kingdom first, if you are a good devotee of the Lord, if you are one-pointed in your desire for him, and you stay on the one path and follow the one teaching, go within yourself and find God. Ask yourself, who am I? And if you pursue that, you will come to the answer that I am in truth am the eternal living Spirit of God in human form.